We're glad you're here this morning. So I'm just curious this morning, by a show of hands, how many people here this morning, you back in high school, college age, you would consider yourself an athlete? You played some kind of sport. Just raise your hand all around the room. Let me see. Let me look. Okay. Put those hands down. How many of you are involved in track and field? Let me see. There we go. Okay. That was one of the first conversations between me and my wife. She told me when we started dating that she ran track. Well, if you've seen my wife, she's 5 foot nothing. And I just pictured, have you ever seen the cartoon characters where somebody runs and you just see wheels like that? And so we were going for a walk and she says, I'm pretty fast. And we had just started dating. I said, well, you know, I played basketball and soccer. Even in the college, I feel like I'm pretty fast. So she says to me, I bet I could beat you. Well, you know, I'm sorry. There's enough male domineering competitive spirit in me. What do you think my response was? I don't think so. That's exactly what I said. So I said, let's race. And she goes, okay, ready? On your mark. She said, we'll race up to that next light pole. I said, okay, that sounds good to me. So now in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, if I lose to her, she will never have any respect for me because she'll think, this guy's a loser. And I don't want her to think that. So she says, on your mark, get set. And I'm in my mind, I'm thinking, I got to beat her. I just got to beat her. She says, go. And so as soon as she says go, I take on to a full sprint. The kind of sprint that, you know, you close your eyes and you're pumping your arms. And I'm running, and I'm looking now. I'm like, is she next to me? She's back here. Well, she took off pretty fast, but she saw how fast I was running. So she stopped, and she's laughing at me because I'm just. So I get to the finish line, and she shows up, and she says, I guess you beat me, I guess. And, oh, yeah, it's humiliating. But there was a short time in high school where we had a track team, and the coach wanted to know who would be available to do the hurdle race. Have you seen the hurdle races? Okay, first of all, the hurdle is, it's this high, and my legs are this high, so it's, anybody here at all do hurdles? Anybody? Kathy, you did hurdles? Did you really? What an athlete right there. So, at that time, a bunch of us high school kids, he said, well, we'll try it. Have you ever tried jumping over a hurdle? Show me the first picture of somebody. These are athletes that have the ability to run as fast as I can run and be able to, they run and their legs, and they get all these hurdles exactly like they're just flying. Well, my experience wasn't anything like that. My experience was more like one of these poor guys right here. And I ran, and I, as high as I could jump, I put that foot up, and I hit that cross piece, and it just fell, and the back piece came up and hit me in the leg, and you know what? I jumped one hurdle, and I said, Coach, I can't do it. I'm done, you know. But I started thinking about it this last week, because as we're going through this series called Face-to-Face, Encounters with Jesus, the individuals in the New Testament that basically, in a sense, they encountered a hurdle of being able to relate to Jesus and figure out who Jesus was in their life. Now, many of them felt this frustration. Go back one more time, Kyle, because this is where I'm at. There are times when I come up against hurdles in my life that I feel like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And I feel like I fall flat on my face, and I feel like, here, I did it again. And I might get one hurdle good and the second hurdle good, but then, sure enough, and as we read about Nicodemus a couple weeks ago, the hurdle that he couldn't get past was his own good, or things that he had done. He felt like he had a pretty good resume, but he wanted to understand who Jesus was and eventually turn his life around because he got past that hurdle. Last week we talked about the woman at the well, or the well woman, and her hurdle was her past history. That when she felt like she wanted to encounter Jesus, the only thing that she could hear and see was where she had been and what she had done. Today, we talk about a young man named Zacchaeus, or Zach, and he struggles. His struggle is getting past where the crowd is. So For those of you who've been in church a long time, help finish this sentence. Zacchaeus was a wee little man, a wee little man. Now, some of you think, that sounds like one of the stupidest songs I've ever heard. It was a Sunday school song, and you had, and a wee little man was he. You did the whole song, and it's really kind of funny. A lot of the theology we were taught as children through songs that we didn't know we were being taught. But I started thinking about that, this wee little man. We've sang the songs. We've heard the story, Zacchaeus. Matter of fact, I didn't go to school with anybody named Zacchaeus. I've never heard that name used again. But I started to think about Zacchaeus and his encounter with Jesus, and that's where we're going to be today. So turn to Luke chapter number 19. Luke 19. Luke 19. So this week I started doing something different that I haven't done in a while, and it's really kind of refreshing. Do you remember a couple weeks ago I kind of encouraged you to find a hard copy of the Bible? There's nothing wrong with digital, don't get me wrong. But there's just something that's just refreshing about opening, because this book, the only reason I open this book is to read God's Word. To open my phone, I'm getting ESPN scores, checking email, but this right here, and so I read especially this portion of scripture this week from my Bible. And I encourage you to do so as well. I encourage you to have a physical copy, spend time in it. But today's bottom line is we need to learn to listen to Jesus and ignore the crowd. And that's where we're going to kind of be today. So if you have your Bibles to Luke 19, look at the first few verses. Verse number 1 and 2. It says, Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. As a man was there by the name of Zacchaeus, he was a chief tax collector and he was wealthy. So as we begin to look at this encounter, it's important to understand the characters in the story. Of course, Jesus being the first character, it says that he was entering through, or on his way to Jerusalem through Jericho. So if this is Jerusalem, Jericho is here. He's entering from the east, and he's going to pass through this city. And the city he's going to pass through, we'll find out more. He hasn't been there according to the gospel record. But he was on his way to Jerusalem for his final week here on earth, the week of the crucifixion, the Last Supper, all those things that happened. So as he's passing through, he stops in this city named Jericho. And it says, and a man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. Now, there's a few things I want you to know about Zacchaeus. You say, well, who is this guy? First of all, from this verse, we find out that Zacchaeus, first of all, he was a Jew. He was Jewish. Zacchaeus is a Jewish name, so he was not a Gentile, but a Jew living outside of Jerusalem. Second of all, he was a tax collector. And we've talked about tax collector and how that amounts to people did not like tax collectors. How many of you here today like tax collectors? It's just, you're making money off of me. That's not a very loving character. They were collecting taxes from your own people who were under oppression at that particular time. And they gave the money right back to Rome. And then the way that they would make their living is not only would they give the money back to Rome that was owed them, they would charge above and beyond what those taxes were so that they could accumulate wealth. So because of that, many of them were referred to as traitors to their own people. Third thing we find out is not only was he a tax collector, he was a chief tax collector. Chief tax collector. He was good at it. He was good at it. Matter of fact, a chief tax collector would not only be himself a tax collector, it would be like in management that he would oversee different tax collectors to make sure they're all making their quota, making sure they're all doing something. And he would make a little bit of money on top of that, which is why the last, it says he was wealthy. He was wealthy. Saying he's a wealthy tax collector is like saying he was a plump chef or that he was an old parachute instructor. He had experience at it. He was good, which is why he made money. It was a lucrative vocation in a corrupt system. So that's who we find out this Zacchaeus is. But let's find out about what his situation is. In verse number 3, he wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. We find that not only was he a Jewish chief tax collector who was wealthy, verse 3 tells us something. He was short. He was short of stature. I'm guessing there's lots of good reasons to be mentioned in the Bible for characters. Man of faithfulness, man of strength, man of courage. Being referred to the short guy in the New Testament probably is not something he was really going to be proud of. And I can relate. I'm guessing that probably he had a characteristic lot like us. When we listen to the crowd that talks about our inadequacies, we tend to try to compensate in other areas. I've not been the man that I am today. I was thinner in college and thinner in high school. I was an athlete, but I liked to eat, so I was always on the thicker side of thin. Does that make sense to you at all? And people would say back at that time, they would make fun of athletes about love handles and things of that nature, and you would kind of fire back because you're a little sensitive. And I have a feeling that sensitivity is going to play into when we find out what Zacchaeus' response was. I think that's probably why he was good at his job. He had a chip on his shoulder. He says, okay, fine, I'm short, but you owe me money. But you know, he had a little bit of power there that was transferred. Look at verse number 4 of Luke 19. So he ran ahead, and he climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him since Jesus was coming that way. He climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him since Jesus was coming that way. I think at this point we realize that Zacchaeus was wanting to see. He was wanting to see Jesus. We read in verse 3 that he couldn't see the crowd. He couldn't see Jesus because he was short. He couldn't see over the crowd. He said, I've got to get past that crowd. When Jesus is coming, we have got to run to him and ignore the crowd. If I ask you this question this morning, does the crowd ever get in your way from seeing Jesus? Does the crowd ever get in your way of seeing Jesus? I think if all of us were totally honest, we would say, well, at certain times in my life, there are things that prevent me from seeing Jesus. And normal times, it's other people. It's other situations. When we focus on the crowd, we always lose sight of Jesus. It's a distraction. We can't see. And the only remedy is for us to get ahead of that crowd, to get to where Jesus can interact with us. And that's exactly what he did in verse 5. And when Jesus reached that spot where Zacchaeus was up in the tree, he looked up to him and said, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once, and he welcomed him gladly. Now, I don't want you to miss this. We don't really have any record of Jesus being in Jericho before. And we have no record of him meeting Zacchaeus when he was on a weekend excursion golfing with the buddies. He has not met Zacchaeus, but yet he looks up to him and he says, Zacchaeus, calls him by name. He says, I want to stay with you. I want to hang out with you. Jesus knew him. He was in the tree. And I have a feeling that when Jesus spoke to him, because at that time, here Jesus is walking down, the crowd's following him, and he gets in a good place, and he says, okay, I want to be able to say, hey, and that's exactly what he did. And Jesus looked to him and said, hey, I know you. You're Zacchaeus. You have any idea how that would make Zacchaeus feel? A number of years ago, I was youth pastor in Abilene, Texas, and the Nike golf tour used to come through a golf course there. And so one of the guys in our church got me, I became a golf marshal. Do you know what a golf marshal is? A golf marshal is the guy that holds the quiet sign up when people are golfing. It sounds like a glamorous job, doesn't pay anything, you got to eat free food. But I got to see a bunch of golfers that I knew, and I followed. And I remember, so what would happen is that you would be in one position of the golf course, and where I was, the guys would drive off the tee box, and their ball would land. And I would stand close to where it was to help mark him, and I would hold this one sign out to let him know where the ball was, if it was inbounds or if it was out of bounds. So what would happen is I got to see these guys, and they would walk down the fairway. Well, I was on the side of the fairway where there were no spectators. They were all on the other side. So I would talk to these guys as if I knew them. Hey, how's it going, man? Hey, good to see you, buddy. I mean, they responded back to me. And at that, by the time the end of the day was over, I'm feeling, hey, these guys know. They didn't know me. I was just some guy holding a sign. That's all I was. I had a golf marshal vest on. But can you imagine if they just said, hey, Brian, how's it going? Good to see you. Wow. A couple weeks ago, we were in New York on vacation with some friends. One of the the couple we went with, he's pastored in Long Island, New York for 11 years. And we're downtown just off Times Square over by 30 Rock, where MTC, where their TV station headquarters are. And we're walking down the street, and there's some guys walking this direction towards us. And one guy's kind of taller, and I looked at him. I thought, I know him. So I said out loud, hey, how's it going, Kenny? And it was Kenny Smith. If you know anything about sports, Kenny Smith played guard for the Houston Rockets. I think he was a North Carolina Tar Heel. He was an all-star. He's on the TNT show that has Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal. He's the shorter of those three, but he's still 6'4". So I said, hey, how's it going, Kenny? And I was with my wife and this other couple, and he looked at me and goes, hey, pretty good, man. And so we walk off, and all of a sudden, Steve, who's my buddy, says, do you know him? Did he know you? I said, yeah, he knew me. That's what it was. He knew me. But I saw a celebrity walking down the sidewalk, and he was trying to walk very quickly because he didn't want to stop. But if he'd have said, hey, how's it going, Brian? Your church doing good? Good seeing you, man. Talk to you later. That would have been awesome. And in my mind, that's exactly how it happened. But he didn't. Hey, how's it going? Zacchaeus has perched himself on this tree as a grown adult, feeling kind of silly. And Jesus looks at him and says, hey, Zacchaeus, how you doing, buddy? Hey, Zach. Hey, why don't you come down? I'm going to hang out with you. I'm going to stay at your house. Zach realized at that moment that he was already accepted. And here's a neat thought. If you are seeking Jesus, he already is seeking you. Now, in theology, if that confuses you a little bit, read the book of Romans, and it kind of draws it out and begins to explain it. It's much more confusing in Romans. But it basically, if you are on this path of looking for Jesus, it's a huge sign that says he's been looking for you, and that's why you're kind of in this game. Look at Luke 19:7, and all the people saw this, and they began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. He has gone to be the guest of a sinner. Verse number 7. I think I'm reading that out of context. Yeah, he's gone to be the guest of a sinner. Now, I want you to pick up on this word, okay? Because this is, I want you to hear this. The crowd always tends to ruin that moment when you're seeking after Jesus. So right now, what's happened? Jesus is walking down. Zacchaeus is up in a tree. Jesus recognizes Zacchaeus. Yeah, I know. I preached way too long. I got it. Nice try, though. He sees Zacchaeus in the tree. Zacchaeus sees him. There's this wonderful conversation. But now all of a sudden, the crowd begins to murmur and say, hey, guess what? And the crowd always tends to ruin the moment. You see, it's the crowd that normally reminds us of who we are, who we used to be. It's never Jesus. Jesus didn't say, you know, I would talk to you, but I know what you've been doing. That was not his response at all. But this crowd right here, they use the word sinner. Sinner. Now, most of the time we think of the crowd that prevents us from seeing Jesus would be people that don't know Jesus. But this word is indicative of a relationship. They knew what a sinner was. Unsaved people aren't familiar with a sinner label. They just think that they're normal. It's Christians that look at people who don't obey God, follow after God, and we call them a sinner. Or they see another Christian who's not behaving like he should, and they call him a sinner. You see, the crowd at that moment was forgetting that they too used to be a sinner. I read this quote this last week in my studies. It says, by Darrell Bloch. Darrell Bloch, he's a New Testament commentator, says, too often people are unwilling to let the diseased find God. Just as a side note, I do believe that this crowd kind of reflects that there are many people that were following after Jesus just to see him, just to spectate him, just to be around. It's kind of a good description sometimes of the church. We want to have a connection with Jesus. We want to know who Jesus is, but as far as following him, maybe not so much, but when we see people who are messed up like we used to be, people who are lost like we used to be, we tend to separate ourselves from them. Why? Because they're a sinner. Ready? Here's some revelation. From this side to this side. You know what God sees? Sinners. Sinners. But this was the crowd that was murmuring, saying, "What's it? What up? Why is he connecting with this guy?" We find another portion of scripture when all of a sudden Jesus is sitting down with a bunch of people, tax collectors and everybody, and there's people outside walking by this household, and it's kind of an open court in front. And they're saying, "Why is Jesus eating with these people? Doesn't he know who they are? Doesn't he know where they've been?" Yes, that's why Jesus came. And we're going to read that verse that kind of reflects that this morning. But as we read this, it says in verse number 8, Zacchaeus stood up and he said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." So there's this dialogue that goes on. Zacchaeus spoke to Jesus. He didn't speak to the crowd. Jesus was speaking to Zacchaeus. He was not confronting the crowd. That crowd was not a part of Zacchaeus' face-to-face encounter. They did not play a role. It's as if it was just locked in. Zacchaeus said, "I want to do this. This isn't something Jesus is asking me to do." Jesus didn't say, "What you've done, I need you to pay back everybody." Zac says, "No, I feel like I need to do this." Now, in order to understand that, remember we said that Zacchaeus was Jewish. So if he was familiar at all with the book of Exodus 22:1, where it says basically, in order for restitution to take place, pay back the person that you've wronged four times what you've wronged them for. So he's familiar with this concept, this understanding. So he volunteered it immediately. Pay back the amount four times. Then in verse number 9, Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house because this man too is the son of Abraham." He wants to acknowledge that yes, even though the world might look at you as a sinner, as the world might look to you as a traitor, you still are one of God's children. You too are from the son of Abraham. And he wants Zacchaeus to know that this encounter, this relationship, Zacchaeus, Jesus says, is between you and me. It has nothing to do with the crowd. Because the crowd's going to remind you, you're not worth this. You've been bad. You don't deserve this. In my life, if you've ever noticed this, eye contact is very important to me. If you've been sitting here on a Sunday every once in a while, you probably don't know this, but when I preach, I try to make eye contact with everybody during the service. Which, just so you know, if you're sleeping or playing with your phone, I can see you. I just thought I might put that out there, okay? Oh, but Pastor, I'm in God's Word while you're talking. Yeah, with both fingers pushing buttons. I got you. But eye contact's always been important to me. When I talk with someone. Have you ever been talking with someone? Like, I'm going to talk with Julie right now. Put your phone up. I caught you, didn't I? You want to make sure that's loud. I'm talking with Julie, okay? So I'm like, "Hey, Julie, how's it going? Everybody doing good in your family?" And I've been around people where you're talking with them, and they're talking with you, but they're looking around to see who is more important than you that they want to talk to. Have you ever done that? The other pet peeve is when I'm talking with someone and they get their phone out and they begin texting and talking while you're in staff meeting, Brad Johnson, and you're right here and you're making conversation. He doesn't do it that often. It's just when Lauren tells him, but I love contact, eye contact. If you listen to me preach, you'll hear me say this phrase. Look at me for a second. Look up here. Do you know why I say that? I'll wake you up. That's for one reason. I believe that eye contact precedes ear contact. When my children were little, I would say, "Look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me." Because you would say things and they're just, But when I had eye contact, then I had ear contact. And I believe when we have eye contact and ear contact, that we then have our heart contact and we understand. and we communicate. And to do that, it requires a focus and everything else in the room gone. We've been married not too long, and my wife comes in the room and she says, "Hey, can I talk to you for a second?" "Sure." And like most men, I've got a remote control in my hand. So she says, "Could you at least mute that?" "Sure, I can mute that." So I muted it, and she continued to talk. And I'm watching Michael Jordan play basketball while she's talking with me. And she would say something like this, "Did you catch that?" And I would say, "What?" "Of course I did." Then she would say, "Repeat that back to me." "Well, you mentioned something about dinner, and you were not listening to me, were you?" "No, I'm sorry, babe. Let's try it again." "I'm not trying it again just yet. Okay, it's muted, and I'm turning my face." And so I finally learned. Of course, now, fast forward to 2019, technology is so awesome. I can pause my TV. It's great. I can even rewind it. She could ask me a question. "No, no, no. Just a second. I'll rewind it, pause it." "Yes, sweetheart, what do you want?" You know why that is? It's because she wants to make full contact. She wants to make eye contact, ear contact. She wants to communicate with me. She wants me to basically disregard everything else around me. And that's exactly what was happening when Jesus was talking to Zacchaeus. But I will tell you, at this moment, Zac and Jesus are locked in. And then he gives this incredible statement in verse 10. Look at your Bibles. "For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." Are you catching what he's saying to him? "You're the reason I'm talking with you. I'm looking for you. I'm seeking you." I think that this statement was not only for Zacchaeus, because I have a feeling while he's having this conversation with Zacchaeus, the crowd is now all going, "Why is he talking to him? He's a sinner." And he says, "Because I came to seek and to save the lost." And he points to Zac and he says, "And that's you." And he's saying it to Zac because Zac realized he was lost. But he was also reminding the crowd around him that, yes, you're important to me, but this is the reason I came. This guy right here, the guy that you had nothing to do with, the guy that you figured he was betraying you, the guy that you thought was a loser, the guy that you thought was a sinner. That's why I came. So we can read into it. This is the mission statement of Jesus Christ. He didn't come to do good. He didn't come to teach people. He came to seek the lost. So when you look at that phrase, "Jesus came to seek and to save the lost," let me rephrase it. Jesus came to look and rescue the lost. That's what he's doing. Have you ever lost something and couldn't find it? Have you ever lost something and you couldn't find it? You had no idea where it was at all? "Last night I'm going to bed, can't find my phone. Can't find my phone." When they call it, she calls it, don't hear it ringing, don't hear it ringing. I get on, find my iPhone. It's here at my house somewhere, but it's on silent. I don't know where it is. Sure enough, I go out, still sitting in my truck right where I left it. I found it, yeah. This morning, my wife's getting ready to leave, and she says, I've got to get to band practice. I got to go. I cannot find my purse anywhere. And so she goes. She looks in the living room. She looks in the kitchen. She comes back in the bedroom, and she's, you know, that frantic feeling. I got to find my purse. She walks over beyond the other side of the bed. Guess what was laying on the ground next to her nightstand where it is every single night? It was the lost purse right there. Have you ever noticed that when you're looking for something, though, it's not looking for you? Her purse is just... "You put me here. I'm not going anywhere." But this is where we differ from lost items, lost keys, lost phone, lost purse. If you are seeking for God, it's because he's already seeking for you. If you have this inclination that says, I want to find God. At that moment, that should be information enough to know that if you have that feeling, it's because he is seeking you out. In John 6:44, it says this, "No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws them." It's this understanding that the reason that you're looking for me is because I'm looking for you. And that's exactly where it was that day with Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus was looking for Jesus, and there was this crowd, and he couldn't see Jesus, and he didn't know what to do, and there's no way he could push him way through because they didn't like him. He thought, you know what I'll do? I'm going to get ahead of the crowd and get to a place where I can see Jesus. And that's exactly what he did. So today's message, I want to ask you a few questions, and I want you not to answer out loud, but where you're sitting, I want you to mentally respond. The first question is simply this. In your life right now, are you able to see Jesus from where you're at? Are you able to see Jesus from where you're at? I remember in high school, there was a time in my life when I was doing something I wasn't supposed to be doing. It wasn't bad, but I wasn't supposed to be doing it. I wasn't supposed to be there. And my mom and dad were at the same place, and I didn't know it. And I saw them, and they didn't see me, and I fell to the ground. I thought, oh, good night. I don't want them to see me. You know why? Because I knew that's not where I was supposed to be, and I was ashamed of where I needed to be. Are you in a place right now where maybe you can't see Jesus? There's things in your life, maybe it's sin, maybe it's relationships, but there's something that's preventing you from having this face-to-face encounter. Second question, in what areas of your life does the crowd prevent you from seeing Jesus? What are those areas? See, I have found that most of us do pretty good, and we click in this area, and we click in this area, and we're doing pretty good. But then there's that one area we know that we struggle with, and we just kind of step past it and say, you know what? I'm a work in progress. I'll get that later. But normally, it's because there are individuals or people in your life that are preventing you from seeing Jesus. You've taken your eyes off of God, and you're looking square in the back of people that don't matter as much as your eternal existence with God will ever matter. So here's the third question. This will grip you a little bit. Is your crowd more important than Jesus? Is your crowd more important than Jesus? You see, as pastor, and I want people to be in this room to connect them with other people in life, and I want them to be here. And all the time I'll say, hey, am I going to see you next week? And they'll, well, here's excuse or this excuse or I've got this going on and this going on. I have found out there are so many things that vie for our attention, and I get that. Pastor, are you against having vacation time? No, I'm not against. But I will tell you this, that there are things in our life that we allow just to happen and think that it's okay. I'm not seeing Jesus because this is a distraction in my life, because these people are a distraction in my life. And that might not be believers. They might be believers. But regardless, is this crowd more important than Jesus? Is this thing that's between you seeing Jesus? Because what happens when you see Jesus like Zach did? Did you see how everything changed? He said, no, it's no longer about me. I'm going to give everybody four times the amount that I stole from them. That's not Zach doing, I'm going to do better. That's the presence of Jesus hitting his life saying, there's going to be a change. You know, I've mentioned this before, and I think it bears mentioning again. If you're here today and you're a believer in Christ, can I just warn you about an area that will prevent you, the crowd that will prevent you from seeing the world as it is? There's people all around you that we would call sinners, but guess what? Jesus Christ came to seek and to save that lost, that sinner. But there's things that you can't get past. I'm going to plead with you. If the only thing you watch on TV is Fox TV News or some other broadcast that tells you how wicked the world is, you become so paranoid and withdrawn that guess what? You don't want to be around the world. You don't want to see those people. That's the crowd that's distracting you. I will tell you that in my life, I surround myself with positive people. I want people who are, we can do it. Not, oh, good night, look at what's happening. Is our world messed up? Yes, it is. It's going to get worse. But right now, there are people that are trying to wade through the junk in this world, and they're looking for someone who can make sense of it, And you might not be able to make sense of it, but you know somebody who can. That needs to be this seeking. Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. So what crowd is preventing you from joining him on his mission? Lastly, maybe a suggestion more than a question. Maybe you need to run ahead of the crowd, start listening to Jesus, and then just learn to ignore them. Just learn to ignore them. There are people in my own life that I understand this. I understand this. There's people in your lives that you know that you've surrounded yourself with, that they're just, you know, when I was a kid, they used to call it peer pressure. You know, Brian, make good decisions. Be careful of the crowd you're hanging with. And I taught all my kids that. And I was there. My kids had friends that I thought, oh, I don't want them around them. Why? Because I knew what it would do to them. There's some of you here today. You need to step away from the crowd. You need to get ahead of the crowd. If you have that person that is filling your ear with nothing but complaints, gripes, gossip, and negative vibes, you might need to run ahead of them and find somebody else. When I was dating in high school, I'm not the most incredibly looking man, but I have my moments. And I dated some of these girls, and I'm not attracted to drama. So I would ask a girl out, and we would sit there, and we'd be in the restaurant. I could think of this one girl in particular, and we're at a restaurant, and she's sitting across from me, and she's like, I said, what's wrong? Oh, nothing. Well, if nothing's wrong, then start smiling. You know what? I don't even want to talk about it. Fine. She never came out of it. After we ate, we were supposed to go to a movie. I get in the car and I begin driving. She says, where are we going? I said, I'm taking you to your house. I got something else I need to do. But I thought we were going to a movie. Not tonight. Dropped her off at her house. Met with my friends. We played basketball till about midnight at the park. Why? Because I just don't need to be around that. I thought, you know what? There's lots of girls that are just... And then I met my little redheaded friend in Bible college named Renee Brown. And she had this... I never met somebody so positive. Guess what? I started hanging around with a new crowd. She was neat. She was fun. She loved Jesus. She kissed good. Those are all great things when it comes to the crowd. I try to use a simple application just to let you understand. There are probably people in your life right now that could be considered the crowd, and they're preventing you from having a face-to-face encounter with Jesus because they're distracting you. They're distracting you. So the question simply is this. Are you content at looking at the crowd, or would you rather run ahead and experience Jesus? Let's bow our heads for a word of prayer this morning.